Good morning. We are keeping it real. And I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest this morning is Shatoya Bentley from the Ebony Collective. They're a community development corporation. They're a coalition. They're a culturally specific nonprofit whose mission is to build power in Oregon's Black communities by providing workforce, life preparedness, leadership development, and unity. So stay tuned. Shatoya, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yay! The magic worked. If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa. This is Keeping It Real. We're live on the phone with Shatoya Bentley, and we're going to talk about the Ebony Collective. And it sounds like you're doing some, you got some kids with you?
Yeah, I have my little two-year-old. He decided to start talking this morning.
Awesome. No problem, because that's life, and so much of what we do is about the kids. They should be in the room. That's just the way I feel about it. So, Shatoya, the Ebony Collective, you guys, I'd heard of you before, but only a little bit, right? But you do a lot, and you have a huge vision. Can you talk a little bit about the projects and programs that you're working on? What all do you all do?
Yeah, I would love to talk about it. And to give a little context about the Ebony Collective brand itself, we are a C3 and a C4 organization. The C3 has been around for almost 5 years. It will be 5 years in June. And the C4 has been around for almost 3 years. It will be 3 years in August. And we are, you mentioned, a culturally specific organization that we have been supporting BIPOC groups over the years. We started right before the pandemic in 2019 with 7 Black women who were already doing the work. We were in various different areas. Some of us were in government. Some of us were doing social work. And I came from doing some community work at the time. I have a large background of doing nonprofit, government, and business since I was 14. That's where a lot of my passion has come from, and I got these women together and was like, hey, you're already doing the work. How about we do it together collectively? And that's where we came up with our own board, our own rules, our identity at the time. We wanted to be about making sure that there's not that many of us in Oregon itself. So there's no way that resources should not be distributed to all of us. So that's where a lot of our programming comes from. The programs came from the board at the time. And over time, it came from community's interest. So we encourage Black families to get involved around the things they care about or what will uplift their livelihoods. We aim to support in 3 counties, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County, in our various programs and projects. Over the years, we have been an education and resource organization, which makes us unique. And we ensure that we do not move without there being some form of community input.
I kind of want to bring your baby into this conversation. Like, so we've talked a little bit about how this idea came together, right? I know there's a lot of people listening who think, you know, somebody ought to be doing something about this out there or that out there. And, but nobody's doing anything. And I know that there are people listening who dream of creating a movement, creating an organization, even just creating a project to help people around them or to make our region better. And one of the things that happens a lot is like, you need a babysitter. But what I wanted to say, you know, like, so as we're talking about this, and we're going to be talking for the whole hour, which is amazing. I'm so excited about your vision and other things that are happening with the community around you. But I wanted to ask you, like, what makes it difficult? Like, we can talk about the vision and we're going to talk about that more. But what has been the most difficult thing for you in moving forward and your colleagues too?
Ooh, that is a beautiful question, because I created the C4. Well, one thing that's unique about us as well is that we do all our paperwork ourselves. If we don't know something, we will make sure we do the research in or have someone with the expertise to help us understand and make it happen. And so while I was having my son, I was starting the C4. And so that itself was wild. I'm not going to hold back. It was a wild experience of delivering a baby and emailing people in the hospital about a board meeting 2 weeks later.
Right.
So it's definitely difficult to have childcare or to retain staff as well that have children, which, again, we are a family-oriented organization, so it's very interesting that due to funding in the industry itself, makes it difficult to make sure people have a livable wage or health insurance or the ability to pay for a daycare or a childcare. So that's how you hear my son in the background, because, I don't get a proper wage in order for me to hire people, higher support for childcare. So luckily, I'm the executive director, so I'm able to bring him to work and have a station for people to bring their little kiddos as well.
That's right. If you just tuned in, our guest this morning is Shatoya Bentley from the Ebony Collective, and this is a live radio show on KBOO Portland. And Shatoya, I want to move into more of the details about what Ebony Collective does. And I'm an old woman now, like I'm an old reporter. I've been out here covering so many things, so many ideas that people don't even talk about anymore. But the idea of community development corporations over the 30 years that I've been reporting in this town, that idea has really grown and blossomed into something that benefits everyday people, not just bureaucrats, right? We have some incredible CDCs in Portland, in Northeast Portland, the Sabin CDC, Hacienda, NEA actually also has one, and they're building incredible low-income housing. They're doing all kinds of infrastructure things. So I wanted to ask you, why did you decide on Community Development Corporation? Where did you decide settling on that as a main focus of Ebony Collective? And what does that mean to you?
Well, I love that you are a reporter, because I used to be a reporter myself. It's one of my secret talents. And how I got Community Development Corporation is I went to PSU and got my community development degree. And so as I was doing my research as a student, with the community development concept actually fascinated me. And I realized that it was missing the community aspect to it. People focus heavily on the development in the corporation part, which is the business part, and keep forgetting the people. And I was raised around people and connecting to people. I'm born and raised in Portland. And so just people first and seeing a community has definitely won it. But definitely that community aspect was missing. And as I continued to get my degree, I was focusing on how could I make a community development corporation. I even did some of my projects on how it can be around people and getting my fellow students support in that endeavor as well. They're always one phone call away. So it's really cool that a lot of us community development degree folks understand that community aspect and get involved.
Mm-hmm. I heard the baby say the word community. You were using the word community. Yeah. I heard the baby say that. So I want to shift gears a little tiny bit and say that there's been a lot of news the past 6 months or so about incredible nonprofits and individual people, especially African and African-American people who have stood up and done amazing things for the Black community in Portland this past year. Albina Vision Trust is a nonprofit organization that is poised to create also affordable housing and some kind of development to try to bring more wealth and resources back to the Black and African American communities. And also Rukaya Adams and the 1803 Fund is an amazing thing. I mean, and it's the same idea that you're talking about, like how to create a field where people can then come and plant the seeds of your lives, of what you want to build and what you want to see. The 1803 Fund got a grant for $400,000 from the richest guy in Oregon last year. Really amazing. Or was it $400 million? Like, it was real money. And now I have $400 million. Okay. Phil Knight and his wife, Penny, pledged $400 million to the 1803 Fund and Rukaya Adams. This is incredible. But what I love when I was reading about what Ebony Collective does is, you know, just to walk that back, is you're working with kids. You're doing a lot of programs with kids and families. Like, somebody has to get the generation ready to get in those seats and start running those developments. And I love that, because the other thing that happened is that yesterday the Department of Education put out its education graduation rate thing. And what, you know, Oregon always has such a poor graduation rate. We're not very well educated in Oregon. And the African, it's something like 70% or 69% of African American students graduated in 4 years. So I wanted to just talk to you about, like, what do you see, you know, wait, let's start going through some of your programs that I was reading about on your website and just talk about them. You've got community safety. You've got Gwen's Pantry, which is brilliant. The food insecurity is terrifying in this town. Again, we talked about economic development, youth advocacy, and environmental justice. And you do focus groups. So can we just talk about those specific things? Like, what are you guys doing around with community safety? You did something really interesting recently. Was it a focus group? Talk a little bit more about your programs that you're doing. And let's start with the community safety.
Yeah, so the community safety concept came out of the father of my son and his uncle were murdered a year and a half ago. Yes, almost 2 years now. And they were heavily involved in the nonprofit and it definitely opened my eyes a lot more to what safety looks like, what healing in the Black community looks like, because people are so heavily focused on folks moving forward instead of actually healing before moving forward. And I partnered up with at PSU, it's called NPCC, the National Policy Consensus Center. They hosted a BIPOC forum, and we sat down for several weeks, and I came out with this community safety concept, and basically tried to figure out what they use for collaborative governance level, how to create that on the community level, and how could community use what government already used to come together to find solutions. And so that's where our focus groups, which I call community conversations, to make them more connected to the community. To get closer and connected to the community.
He's got a few things to say right now. This is a complicated moment, and that's totally fine. If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving. We are keeping it real, and you know we always do that on this show. Keeping it real with Lisa Loving, our guest is Shatoya Bentley, and we are talking about her community development corporation, and we're hanging out with her two-year-old. And actually, I love moments like this because it highlights what we're really doing and what it's really about. But Shatoya, I also... did I hear you say that two important family members were killed last year?
Yeah, they were killed in 2022.
Okay. I'm so sorry to hear that. I just want to say I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you for that.
As you are having these conversations about community safety and sharing your idea about policy, who's in on that conversation? And you've talked a little bit before, I mean, and you did some focus groups, but who are you talking to? Who's in the room?
A lot of the folks that are in the room when I talk about policy are different organizations. So we have joined a lot of coalitions, like, in 2022, we helped pass a measure
No problem at all.
I know, it's like I'm moving into now, which we're into election year, but we passed the ballot measure to make sure that everyone has access to affordable health care, no matter what your income status is. We helped in that way by doing door knocking and phone banking, and then and just raising awareness that this is happening to our email list. We've also been a part of a Northwest Health Foundation Civic Health Coalition for the past almost 4 years now. And we have joint forces with organizations that you mentioned before, like NEA and APANO and Unite Oregon, just to name a few that are a part of that coalition. And currently on a campaign finance reform coalition, and there's a couple of other ones that are sparking up at this time due to getting prepared for the new election, and just definitely, and that's on our C4 side. And on our C3, it's more so we've been just trying to collaborate with the community, raising awareness of who we are and what we stand for and how the Ebony Collective can be a benefit for the community the most. So it's more so how could people make this their go-to hub.
Oh, that's an amazing thought. So I love how, and again, a lot of people listen to, I hope people are listening to this show and thinking about organizing. I hope people are listening to Keeping It Real and thinking about what it would take for them to get up out of their Barco lounger and go do something important because there's a need for it. And it's interesting for me to hear you talk because, you know, if you're describing what you're doing, that tells me there's a need for it. And there are, you know, so many people. There's something about the collapse of media, the collapse of news media that makes it harder to organize, and it makes it harder to be organized because people in newsrooms, God bless them, God bless all you people, you people to the people in the air room, God bless all you guys. But when I went to journalism school, we were told, no, you can't have an opinion, no, you can't endorse anything, you know, and that's not even a human, that's not even real, right? I mean, if people had to be completely objective to do reporting, then somebody needs to go over to Congress and fire the entire White House press corps. I mean, for real, let's be real, white dudes, you know, reporting on white. That was rude. I didn't mean to be rude, white dudes. I love you. But Shatoya, one of the things that strikes me again is that I keep seeing a garden in my mind. Like, you, this is a long haul. This stuff you're working on is a long haul. And I also wanted to ask you, Gwen's Pantry, what is that? I'm going to just ask you about stuff I saw on your website because I didn't get a chance to talk with you beforehand because you've been ill and it's been the ice storm times. But talk about Gwen's Pantry. What is that?
Yeah. So, Gwen was one of the founding board members, and she had recently passed away in April of last year from having a rare bone disease, multiple myeloma, and the pantry was her idea because she had came from Central City Concern, and she had transferred over to Multnomah County, and she just had a huge heart in helping the people because she's also born and raised in Portland, and she knew what she experienced and a lot of people around her experienced, and she knew our Black folks needed help, needed support. And so it also came out of after our COVID response. We helped over 350 families over the pandemic by giving them cleaning supplies or toiletries. Due to there was a lot of folks giving out food, and we didn't have a place to store the food, so we thought it was best out. How about we... A lot of our folks were dying due to lack of, like, cleaning once they get home, things of that nature. So we're like, how about we supply them with some cleaning supplies so they can clean their surfaces when they get home or clean their clothes after a long shift, things of that nature. So the pantry was the after effects of the pandemic, and she's the one who came up with the idea. And so we put it in her name.
I want to talk with you a little bit about that a little bit later. If you just tuned in, our guest is Shatoya Bentley with the Ebony Collective. They operate a bunch of active programs, including community safety, Gwen's Pantry. Maybe we'll talk about a little bit more economic development, youth advocacy, and environmental justice. Later at the end of the hour, Shatoya, I want to ask you how our listeners can support you, even listeners that maybe are not of African descent, because I bet a lot of people would love to support what you're doing. We talked a little bit about the focus group. So when you decided to create this organization, did you sit around and think, like, what is the niche? What is the need? You know, I see these people over here doing that. These people are doing that. Like, did you spend a lot of time, like, hand-wringing over what you needed to do? Or did the seven women just come together and say, no, we're on it? Like, what did that creative process look like?
Well, make a long story short, I was in government for 3 years, and I saw a lot of urban renewal projects being discussed without the support of the Black community. Like, there was no communications with them. There was no consideration. It was just, these developments was happening, and we're on a roll. This is what the process is. And I'm like, what about the people who are already there? Have y'all talked to them? Have you discussed this with them? Do they know this is even coming? And a lot of people were saying no. And me being 22, 23, I'm aging myself a little bit, being at that time, I felt like I had no power, especially being in government, young, hungry, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, about just being in government and governance and seeing where there was a huge disconnect between the people and the policymakers. And so it just, that hunger started becoming annoyance. I grew annoyed about how government was not making sound and clear decisions, where all they could do was ask and actually consider the input they were receiving, actually incorporate it in their follow through. And me and a coworker at the time, when I was working for the city, we thought about, hey, start a nonprofit. And I was like, no, you know, I can. I always talked about it, but no, I don't think I'm ready. I'm still young. Don't have kids at the time. Well, don't have a kid. And so I'm like, you know, I still got a couple of years on me to grow, but I was already ready, just wasn't confident in my leadership and the things that I knew at the time. But I already built relationships with different community leaders, which, again, it was just everyday people who I find and consider as leaders, who already were doing the work and were already hungry to see improvement in our community. Not just on a service-based level, but on a resource, on a financial, on a uplifting ourselves, like creating a space for ourselves and grow based on the things that we see fit. And we were like, we can do that. We're doing it together. Why can't the community do it as well?
You know, it's interesting, Shatoya. When I think the world, I personally believe that society has collapsed. Our society has collapsed. And there's a lot of, I should do a show about that at some point. But it was already collapsed for a lot of people. Now it's collapsed for basically everybody. But one of the things that strikes me about what you're talking about again is, like, what is the process of deciding that you're going to get up and do something about a problem that you've already looked at, you've lived it, right? And as I'm talking with you, and a little later, I want to talk about it some more again, is what are some of the obstacles, especially that the African people of African descent in the United States face that other people don't. And it's real. But having said all that, I want to shift gears a little bit, because now you've talked about, you know, who's in the room, who should be in the room, who should be giving input. And what should people be doing? And then you mentioned the election. And I noticed that there was a part on your website where you're encouraging people to register to vote. A lot of grassroots organizers, a lot of radical people, I'm not saying you're radical, I don't mean to label you, but a lot of people that are left of center are really salty about elections. But I want to say this, that I feel like even though a lot of bad things are happening, I think that the expansion of the city council, the code changes in how our city is run is going to be a sea change. And there's certain people I feel like that are in a seat where they can maybe impact that. And I think you're one of those people. Like you yourself could be an elected official, as if you need that headache, right? But you're literally, this is what leadership development is. And it's fascinating to me as you're going through, you're doing community focus groups and things like that. You're showing other people how this stuff is done. Can you talk a little bit about what is important about, let's just start out. I want to ask you and sound you out about government, because you've worked in a lot of places. You've got a lot of experiential knowledge. First of all, why do you feel like this coming election that's happening in November of this year is important?
Oh, it's extremely important. And I am an elected official. I was elected in May. To be on Mount Hood Community College school board.
Congratulations. That's a big job.
Thank you. I was appointed in 2022. Yeah. 2022.
Mm-hmm.
In November. And then I got elected by the people last year. And this stuff is extremely important. Like, around that, my election, a lot of my community, people I grew up with, voted for me. They were shocked to see somebody they knew on the ballot. They were excited to see somebody they knew on the ballot. And they were like, I haven't voted in a long time, but I'm gonna vote for you. Or I never voted at all, but I'm gonna vote for you. So it's extremely important.
Just having a sense of connection, having a sense of connection to the outcome of an election is kind of unusual for a lot of people in this country. For me, I feel like that too. And what's happening with the change in government is, and if you just, you know, a lot of people probably just tuned in, they don't even know what I'm talking about, but City of Portland's government is going to completely change. And we're going to have more city commissioners, and each commissioner is going to be elected by the people that live in their district, not the whole city. And not only that, we're going to have instant runoff voting, or however, whatever name we're giving to it, which... Yeah. Have you been following ranked choice? Do you know much about it? Do you have thoughts about what impact that could have?
Yes. We will also be training people to get a better understanding of what ranked choice voting is as well. Because this year we will be focusing on the C4 side, just mainly about the voters, just registering people to vote. Don't care how your political affiliation, just as long as you are voting.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding ranked choice voting, because we will also be voting for that on a statewide level. And I think for the city of Portland, having ranked choice voting and having our own sectioned off spaces, I think this will be beautiful, because East Portland has heavily not been heard in a lot of ways when it comes to resources, when it comes to city support, or access to just livable, like walkable streets, like sidewalks, just transportation sometimes. Just all kinds of things, or just clearing the roads. We still had snow a little bit on this side, whereas closer to my mom's side, on the northeast side, the roads were clear. So it's definitely, you see the differences, and it looks like two different areas when it's still Portland. So it's very disheartening to see the lack of support on the east side. But given that we will have people from the east side being a representative on our city council, we'll hopefully see some outcomes that we would like to see.
Do you know of anyone? Are you trying to talk anyone into running for office? Are you like lobbying people that you think should be leaders? I mean, you don't have to answer that. I just need to know personally. I need to know personally.
Not at this time, but okay. We will see.
It's interesting because to me, it's interesting because I'm an old white woman. Okay, I'm a 61-year-old white woman. I live my life. I've been privileged, you know, living in a. I feel like I've lived my life in a privileged bubble, and then certain things happened that made me realize that I was in a bubble. And one of those parts of the bubble is like I grew up with my parents who said you could do anything. Right. And the people around me, you know, you could do anything. Well, there was sexism and stuff. But I feel like with this new form of government, a lot more people that we don't usually see in positions of power maybe can do anything. So I'm really hoping to see that different people with different values and maybe not all rich people. I don't mean to be negative about rich people, but I'd like to see some people who have less money be in the city council.
I agree with you on that.
The class issues are, I feel like the class issues in the city of Portland have run away like a runaway horse. And it's hard to, a lot of what I see the debates on in city council really are about class, and yet no one ever says that. And I do want to say, if you just tuned in, our guest is Shatoya Bentley with the Ebony Collective. They operate a whole bunch of programs, community safety, youth advocacy, environmental justice, leadership development. And let's start talking about this now. Shatoya, what do you have planned for 2024? Do you have any big ideas of things that you might need volunteers for?
Well, we are currently a part of the tax increment finance engagement group. So we will be hosting a series of healing before we go into the nitty-gritty of TIF in off of 82nd and in the Park Rose neighborhood and off of 122nd as well. Would love people's support in that. And we also will have more community safety conversations. We will have two more. Our next one will be on February 10th. It's more so a sacred space, though. So it's highly encouraged for BIPOC or for Black folks to get involved and have a great conversation. Then you get awarded $50 because you're spending your Saturday with us for about 3 hours discussing different ways of community safety could be viewed and what are some solutions so we can come up with our own solutions. And also we are wrapping up our environmental justice needs assessment document. And so I kind of need a couple of volunteers that would help me gather up some government historic documents, which I know how to do. I used to do some recording and records management when I was in government. So I would love to show people how to do that. And lastly, we really need some people who are interested in writing grants for us. Money, money, money.
It's interesting about, you know, the need for actual cash money, because in the past, grassroots movements, nonprofits, we have starved ourselves, and it's not sustainable. And money is just energy. So it can be difficult to organize grassroots communities of people that don't have a lot of money, and try to fund the things that really need to be staffed. But I wanted to come back and say, Shatoya, you do a lot of different kinds of things, but this issue of convening conversations, like, and we've talked about it, that's not generally considered to be a service in a nonprofit, the same way a food pantry is. Why are the conversations just as important as the food pantry and the other services? Why is it just as important as those?
Because historically in Oregon, the Black experience is not captured by Black people, or if at all. We've constantly had conversations like with government or with people in power. However, it falls on deaf ears, and we have not seen change. And once those experiences are captured, you can't ignore it. So it's very important for the conversations to be had and for people to actually think about these things, because we have been silent. We have been ignored. We have been breadcrumbed. And so it's important for people to actually recognize that that's what we've been living under, and we don't have to live in that way. And we can have a voice and be heard. And not just our voice being heard, but action being put behind it by ourselves, for ourselves. That is possible. And some electeds are hungry to hear our voice and to hear our plans, our policies, and our demands for financial stability. And so we love to work with them.
Just to follow up on that thought, and maybe for some people this is an awkward thing to say, but you are the Ebony Collective. And so to have a conversation about public safety with only Black people in the room, why is that important?
Because, again, given like the civil rights history, those secret spaces that Black folks created have been dismantled, and it's not really seen, or every time there's more than one to two, two to three Black folks, it's considered we're picking up something to go against somebody instead of how we're doing what other cultures are doing, and it's building each other up. And so it's always been a fear of Black folks like gathering. And so it's important for us to say, hey, these are our concerns in the community. One of the big concerns is the fact that we don't have a physical space. Like, that's why it's great that Albina Vision is doing what they're doing and other Black organizations are doing what they're doing. Because we had a whole like generation, decade of not really seeing that. And so now there's an overflow, which is beautiful, of us having those spaces. And so it was a need, and people are fulfilling that need for themselves. And it's a beautiful thing.
Maybe it's even been two generations. since people were really, I think about generational, there's the generational wealth issue, but there's also the political organizing issue. And what happened when the, I don't want to be a nerd right now, but I feel like when our important leaders were assassinated back in the 60s and maybe into the 70s, the, was it the FBI went in and just clear cut a whole lot of organizations from by people of color, whether it was the Black Panthers or the AIM. And it's had a generational impact. I mean, that is what generational violence is. So I'm so glad that you're here and talking with us, and the kid too. Like, love the kid. It really is about the kid. And I do want to ask you about the kid in a few minutes, but when you, Shatoya, look around our city and our region, what do you see?
I see opportunity right now in this year. In the past couple of years, there has been opportunity for us to make space for ourselves, meaning Oregonians. Like, there's opportunities to buy buildings, there's opportunities to buy homes, there's opportunities of having the career, like whether it's technical or trained, whether it's banking, like we need a lot more lenders. We have a lot of real estate agents, which is great. But we definitely have a lot of opportunity. It's more so how to get those opportunities is where the gray area is. But there's definitely opportunity for the nonprofit world to collaborate. Collaboration will be our greatest strength because the financials will not always be there. And where someone else is struggling is where the others can support. When it comes to the business world, I see Black businesses being more storefront, which is beautiful. It's a prime time to change the way that Portland is viewed. I know a lot of folks always constantly make it seem like Portland is just a scary place. And even when the city has not been that nice to me, it still is my hometown.
Right.
So it's definitely, it's been a journey.
It has, because you've done a lot of things in your life, and I was amazed looking at your resume. If you just tuned in, our guest is Shatoya Bentley from the Ebony Collective, and we're going to start wrapping up this interview. Shatoya, for people of African descent, for Black people, African people, and African American people in this region, who do you want to come and seek you out? Who do you want to come and find you? Because what do you want to make sure you're investing in people that find you? First of all, who should be looking you up?
The folks that you just mentioned, we definitely are a space for anyone who identifies with the African diaspora. I've done informational interviews, one-on-one interviews, because these things, like environmental justice, like environmental climate change, all of those things, they affect all of us. And it's not just being paused.
Right.
But just everyone that you've mentioned is folks who should seek us out. Come and see what we do. Come see the mural in our community space. We're on 31st and Sandy. Love to give tours of our building. And also tell people what we have coming in store. Right now, we're trying to really create a membership list at this time. So definitely just emailing us. We'll include you in our email list.
What is your email?
It is info@ebonycollectivecdc.org.
All right. Okay. So for people listening right now who are thinking about, like we just listened to you talk about how you took your life in your both hands and changed it, and you're changing a whole bunch of other people's lives too, instead of just going and applying for another job with the Water Bureau or the Housing Bureau, which is what a lot of us would do. Like, we would sit there, we would have never gotten out of that chair of, no, I can't do that, that's too much work. For people who are listening to you right now and they're thinking, wow, a lot of good things are happening, what advice do you have for them? If they want to organize something, people, places, what advice do you have?
I will highly recommend for you to first seek out organizations. Like, if you're sitting at your desk or you're sitting at home, your at-home desk, and you're thinking about doing a transition, first take a step into where your interest is. So say you're into organizing or getting involved in the community, come on down to the Ebony Collective and see what we do and see how we operate. And we would love to show you those things, and you'll see if it's an opportunity for you. It was a couple of years before I actually went fully into the nonprofit world. So it's definitely a transition.
Right. And, you know, I do have a couple questions left, and this one's a hard question. Like, we talked earlier about Gwen's pantry, you know. We talked about the father of your baby and what you've been through. What can we hear the baby's name? What's the baby's name?
Oh, Khalil.
Khalil. So you've had literally seen death and blood and tears just in the past few years trying to do this work. What keeps you going? What keeps you going, Shatoya?
My kid. He definitely saves me in a lot of ways. He makes sure that I'm positive. He makes sure that I wake up every morning.
Right.
And making sure breakfast is made. We walk to the park every day. And his brain is beautiful. He's constantly learning and growing and saying words like community. Like, I've never heard him.
He did.
That.
He said that earlier this hour. I heard it.
So definitely, he came in my life at a very promising time when I didn't think I needed it. So he saved me in a lot of ways.
Okay, so we're getting ready to close out the show. Shatoya Bentley, what's the most important thing that listeners need to know about the Ebony Collective CDC, and the coalitions you participate with? What's the most important thing that listeners need to know?
That you can always get involved with us, and you can donate. Our donate button is on our website. Our website is theebonycollectivecdc.org, and we are just Black women seeing a mission that we feel like have been missing for some time, and also is always hearing from the community, and always growing in a collaborative, unifying space.
All right. Okay. All right. Shatoya, I just wanted to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It was a joy. All right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Let's see if I can make this magic work. We are often looking for people to be volunteers, especially people that want to be a volunteer board op, which is amazing and fun. Thanks to our guest, Shatoya Bentley from the Ebony Collective. Find out more about them online at theebonycollectivecdc.org. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving on KBOO Portland. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making all this possible. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.fm. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.